You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. So pretty much on a weekly basis, I have an investor or a new investor around town ask me about investing out of state. And so I tell them, you know, my thoughts on it, but because before I was an agent and before I lived in Denver, I researched out-of-state investing. However, I never pulled the trigger because I determined it was not the right thing for me based on my personality, my also, I don't know if it's a realistic or pessimistic expectation. That's not a matter of if things go wrong, but when things go wrong. And as I learned more of the details about building long-term wealth in real estate, it made me want to focus on the area I lived in. So I always share my thoughts with people, but I never actually bought out of state. So I wanted to bring someone on the podcast that has successfully invested out of state and tell us what it's really like to get it going. The good, the bad, the pros, and the cons. So I have with me Terrence Doyle, who is back in the studio, and he has been successfully investing out of state for a couple years now. And for our regular listeners, you've heard Terrence on the podcast with Opportunity Zones and another podcast where he talked about his investing and flipping business. So Terrence, welcome back to the show.
Chris, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back.
So before we jump into all the out-of-state investing, because we'll kind of start from the beginning of why you got started and just to present day, share with everyone listening kind of what your current portfolio looks like, what markets you've been in, kind of the highlight of that.
Yeah, high level, you know, our focus really is Denver, Denver, Colorado. We own and manage roughly 100 doors in Denver between mostly multifamily. We have a few single families sprinkled in there. And in Des Moines, Iowa, we currently own and manage roughly 250, give or take, units there. We recently sold a piece of our portfolio, but we're right around 250 doors there that we own and self-manage, mostly multifamily. Throughout the years, we have bought and sold in Vegas, LA, Louisville, Kentucky. We're currently in Tampa, Florida, doing a flip. We've done a few in South Carolina, Dallas, Texas. So it's, you know, it's safe to say that we've done it around the country. And you know, I think success is like in air quotes because, you know, I think we had a lot of losses to get us to a place where we now can do it. Quote unquote successfully, but it's, you know, I've learned a lot, and that's kind of what you and I have been talking about, which was what I hope can bring some value and hopefully lessen the bruises for other people that want to do it.
Wonderful. Well, let's just jump into it. How did you get started in investing out of state?
Yeah. So back in 2016, we had been flipping some houses in Denver, and we came across a portfolio of multifamily. They were duplexes and fourplexes. So that was the first time I had personally purchased a multifamily property anywhere.
And that was here in Denver.
It was off market. It was from a trust. The family, something had happened, and the family basically wanted to liquidate their portfolio. So we bought the fourplexes. And when I saw the power of multifamily, basically being able to, instead of just focusing on one flip at a time, being able to buy one property, renovate every unit the same way we would a flip, and then fill it up with market tenants, and then saw how that traded based on a cap rate, which you do a good job explaining in some of your other podcasts and on your website. My eyes were like, okay, this is really powerful. Let me try and do this in Des Moines, Iowa, which is where I'm from. And I'd always wanted to, like back in the day when we were doing 100 flips a year back in the auction days, I had tried to go to Des Moines, I think 2011, 12. And the Midwest mentality is much more conservative, much slower paced. So when I went there and talked to some family friends that were realtors, I said, hey, what do you think about the auction here? What do you think about buying properties? And everyone, you know, discouraged me. They said, oh, you shouldn't do it. The market here is really bad. You won't be able to sell them. You're going to get hurt, blah, blah, blah. So I never bought anything back then. So then fast forward, I'm doing real estate full time. I understand a lot better what things look like. So I researched the auction myself, and I was in Des Moines. I believe it was like May of 2016. I had emailed a few realtors that we knew from family friends in Des Moines. I met with them, kind of did the same process, took them to lunch, said, hey, tell me about the landscape here. What could I buy multifamily? And one of the ladies happened to be one of the top producing agents in Des Moines. And I'll never forget her name is Penny Carroll. And Penny said, you know, actually, I have a couple people that want to sell off-market fourplexes right now, and we should go look at them. So the next day we went to look at them, and these places were trashed. I think they had had the same tenants for literally 20 years. One gentleman had lived in one of the units for 30 years. And I ended up, so that was the first property we looked at. It was a fourplex in Des Moines, Iowa. We bought it for $44,000. We put it under contract. I literally think we put it under contract like the next day. I emailed Brandon. I was like, Brandon, we've never done this here, but like we have the four units. We thought the average rents were going to be like $700. So we're looking at $2,800 and we're buying it for $44,000. I was like, I don't care what any other details that come along with the property. We have to buy it. So that was the first deal we did. And fast forward now, we have 250 units there. And so the first couple were like that. I think we bought a duplex for $30,000 the week after we put under contract. So we were buying it between $10,000 and $15,000 a door.
Now, was it that cheap because it's Des Moines or because it's Des Moines and they were distressed properties that were going below market value?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It was, Des Moines has increased a lot the last couple of years. I think now if you were to go to Des Moines, the average price per door is between $50,000 and $60,000 a door.
Okay.
That's, even if it's outdated, you're at $50,000, $60,000 a door. So I think part of it was 2016 that out-of-state investors hadn't really realized or, discovered Des Moines, what you could buy there. They were off market and they were significantly distressed. So they had 50, 60, I think at the time people were paying $200 or $300 to stay there. And today I think, the average rent in that property is $700. So they were, 50 to 60% under market rent and had not been updated in 20 years and mold and, like the foundation had issues, the roof had issues, the whole thing. So that was my experience buying, on paper, it looked really, really attractive. And keep in mind, at the time, I didn't live there. I still don't live there. I didn't even have a property manager and I didn't really have a construction crew. I just knew the area. I was from there. My dad lived there. I had some really close friends in real estate. And I just, kind of my mentality was I'll figure the rest out later, which basically means we took a bunch of losses along the way to figure it out. But we did figure it out, but it cost us a lot of money and a lot of pain.
So talk about that, because I think that's really the interesting thing is because, I think most people realize it's not all smooth sailing. It's
right.
Not just a great, a great ride. There's going to be ups and downs like a roller coaster. So you bought that place. What was the first hurdle, the first black eye you got? There was the first reality check.
So, the first thing was, we had to find construction there. Because I speak fluent Spanish and because of the ease we've been able to find construction crews in Denver, I assumed I'll be able to do the same thing in Des Moines. So one of the things that we realized was plumbers and electricians are in high demand in Des Moines. And, we probably pay our plumber and electrician between $30 and $35 an hour for the volume that we do in Denver. So I thought I could apply the same metrics. And I was like, Des Moines, the cost of living's lower. I can definitely find a plumber for this. And right now, even today, with the volume we do, we're probably paying 20% more in Des Moines.
So it's more expensive.
It's more expensive.
Wow.
So even though the cost of living is much less, they're in higher demand there. So there's fewer plumbers and electricians per capita there. I don't know if that's a government, stat, but that's a Terrence Doyle stat just for me, my experience that it's there's less qualified tradesmen there, and in turn, it's a lot more expensive. So that was the first aha was, oh my gosh, we're gonna pay, And at the time when we first started, we didn't have the volume. So I think I was paying close to double that there. And that was a hard pill to swallow. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm paying $10,000, literally $10,000 for plumbing and electrical on this fourplex. And in Denver, I'd be paying four or five. And then, the construction, I think we went through, my dad and I probably went through three or four guys that just to come in paint and lay tile and hardwood floors, whereas in Denver, we have 20 guys that we could call to do that. In Des Moines, we went through three or four before we found someone we could trust. And eventually a year later, we ended up moving our top GC I'd worked with for 3 years in Denver to Des Moines because he wanted to lower his cost of living for his family. So for a full year, I was basically having to fly back every 2 weeks, manage construction, people not showing up. At one point I found the guy that we really liked. He was managing three or four projects for us. This was in 2016. And we gave him $25,000, and that was the initial draw to start. We paid for the materials. That was his draw to get the roof started, do the demo, and he basically quit on the job. So we lost $25,000. I think he did a little bit of work. He probably showed up for a week. So that was and in Denver, I can't remember the last time that happened where someone just took off and didn't finish a project.
Now, do you think that was because he saw you as, hey, some out-of-state guy, I can rip him off?
100%. I think he knew that we had a bunch of projects going on. He, you know, was like, oh, here's this young guy doing a bunch of projects here and in Denver. And, you know, he's not going to know and he's not going to be here to manage it. Because I do think like a week went by and, you know, my dad would go by and try and, you know, my dad has a full-time job. So he's just doing this on the side. So, overpriced, you know, labor that was more expensive than what I was used to, finding a contractor that we could trust, you know, that, you know, with the amount of volume we had and the amount of work. Because, you know, doing these kind of projects that are labor intensive, you have to find the right kind of contractor that wants to do that kind of work, which what I've discovered is much harder in these smaller towns. You would think that it'd be cheaper, but it's actually more expensive.
What's the population in Des Moines?
If you take the suburbs, I think you're at 800,000 in the suburbs.
Okay.
If you include the suburbs, 800,000. You know, and okay. Des Moines has great, you know, if you Google Des Moines, like Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and, you know, all these cities say it's one of the best places to raise a family, very affordable, great schools. You know, it's I think last year they ranked it one of the fastest growing cities in the Midwest, ahead of Indianapolis, ahead of Kansas City, you know. So it's got some good things going for it. But what you learn in the Midwest is that, you know, the cost of living is lower, but a lot of the trades are more expensive and it's harder to find good people you can count on. And you kind of pay what I call a dummy tax when you go into, you know, that, and that's definitely what we paid, you know, learning all these lessons. Like, yeah, were we buying properties right? 100%. You know, not,
so you're I like that dummy tax. So is that dummy tax, it was more expensive in Des Moines than your dummy tax out here in Denver?
Well, 100%, because, you know, in Denver, we're not really, quote unquote, paying a dummy tax because we live here. We know the lay of the land.
But you still have to go through an initial learning curve, right?
You do a learning curve, but I think you're not, I'd say you're more paying, that's the cost of education.
Okay.
Whereas in Des Moines, I think for being out of state and in other places, like, you know, we were probably buying some neighborhoods that we shouldn't have early on. That was a dummy tax. We're probably overpaying, you know, we're contractors are taking off with money. You know, I think the other thing that I learned, you know, in Des Moines was, and we were just talking about this in Denver, is, you know, I had never heard prior to 2016 going to Des Moines, I'd never heard of a rental certificate or rental inspections. And, you know, I think we had 30 or 40 doors at the time where, you know, the city's knocking on our door saying, oh, you're up for a rental inspection. I'm like, what's a rental inspection? And they had their own, you know, so the city has a building code and then the city also has a rental code and two totally separate things, you know, that they have a different lens that they view, you know, screen doors and how the appliances should be working and how they want the lights, you know, just every little thing they will pick apart and they'll show you, oh, this is line 22 in this code. You know, you need to have this done. It's like, what? I've never even heard of this. Why do you care? You know? So that was another thing. Like I'd never even heard of that, you know, in all the relationships, me being from Des Moines, I had never heard anyone talk about a rental certificate, you know, I had no idea. So I think we've even had like, I think we got fined on one property because we weren't aware and they were
and
sending the mail.
And did you have a property manager while that happened?
Yeah. So that was the other thing, you know, you in Denver, there's a ton of really credible property managers. And I would say they're probably a little bit more sophisticated just because they deal with more investors in Denver. Whereas in Des Moines, a lot of mom and pop shops. And I thought, okay, we have 50, 60 doors now or 100 doors. I'm going to be able to go to someone and be their largest client and get favorable terms and get great service. And I'll never forget, Chris, you know, we had been into Des Moines about a year and we had over 100 doors. And I got the report from the property manager and we'd only collected $18,000 in rent. 100 doors, $18,000 in rent. And I remember being like, what is going on? You know, like this is, we were supposed to be collecting, I think like 70 or 80. And you know, it was one thing or another. It was like, oh, we had to pay taxes. Oh, we had to pay maintenance. Oh, we needed new appliances. And I started looking at the maintenance bill and it's like, why did we pay $300 to some plumber to go and like fix a leak or the P-trap or this or that? So we lost a lot of money. You know, we went through one, you know, two or three property managers.
So when this happened, so you started buying in 2016. Yeah. So when you got that discrepancy in the rental income, when was that approximately?
2017.
Okay,
that was
so about a year
like
later?
June or July of 2017.
Okay, and you're still flying back and forth every two weeks or so?
So we ended up getting to the point when we had 150 doors and the property, we were with our second property manager my brother was looking for a transition from coaching, my brother Daniel. And so he ended up moving back in September of 17. So September of 17, we had roughly 150 doors. He moved back, did not know anything about real estate. And I was so fed up with what we were going through with property management. And we were losing so much. I think we were literally losing $20,000 to $30,000 a month. Now, mind you, we had massive equity in the portfolio because we had bought it right. We had added value and we knew we could raise rents. So we had equity. So on paper, it looked good. but monthly we were hemorrhaging cash.
Yeah, I mean, equity doesn't pay your American Express 100, bill.
100%, yeah. And or pay the, you know, the mortgages to U.S. Bank. So, so yeah, we were in a lot of pain. At one point, there were several times where I looked at Brandon and said, man, maybe we should just sell this because we could still cover our basis. Because we had bought it so, you know, we had bought it at such a low basis that we could still get out.
So you guys actually just thought about
there was multiple
away,
times.
Huh?
If my brother wouldn't have moved back to Des Moines and solved the property management issue, we definitely would have exited. There was no way we could have kept going. I kind of just had it with property managers and just with the whole thing. I mean, the rental inspections were difficult. The property management was difficult. Just, you know, having someone that's not their capital and they're in another state, you know, thousands of miles away, managing your properties, trusting them to get the best tenant in there, trusting them to really watch your maintenance expense, trusting them to really, you know, oversee construction and the unit turns. It was I was just at a point where I was like, man, it doesn't matter how good I buy a property. If I don't have someone really, really, really good with our interest aligned managing it, it doesn't matter how low I buy it or how right I buy it or how good it looks on a spreadsheet. So thankfully, you know, my brother and his wife wanted to move back to Des Moines.
And were they here in Denver? Elsewhere?
He was a basketball coach in Arkansas.
Okay.
So my brother had been a basketball coach his whole career. They wanted to move back to Des Moines and start a family there for all the same reasons that people love Des Moines. It was, you know, very affordable. They wanted to be close to family, the education, you know, all those things. So he moved back with no experience in real estate. And basically step by step, brick by brick, learned how to manage construction, learned how to lease up units, learned how to file evictions, learned how to handle maintenance, learned how to, you know, the best way to lease up units. So, you know, it probably took him 6-7 months. You know, he took a bunch of beatings as well. But even in that, it was much better because our interests were fully aligned. You know, he was family. He was really had our back. He was trying to trim every dollar he could. And there was a massive difference in our occupancy and what our maintenance was, what we were spending maintenance and our utility bills, just across the board, things got better. So
if you don't answer this question, just tell me, but I'm assuming obviously family is going to give you a huge advantage, right. But I'm assuming was his compensation structure differently than the property manager? Do you have like some skin in the game or some upside? Like,
so the way we structured it was we had to give him a base because he had a family, had a wife. So we gave him a base that was less than what we were paying the other property manager, but like 90% of that. And then what we did was we incentivized him for every 10 doors we bought, he would make an extra $100 a month. So the more we grew, his base increased. And then as our occupancy grew, like I think we set metrics like at 90%, he got a certain bonus, and 95% and then 98%.
Okay.
And I think we just recently, in January, we purchased 50 units and we brought that vacancy down to, we probably took it to half. But prior to that, we were at 97% occupancy in January of 19. So we went, you know, but it probably took us a year and a half of, you know, losing money every single month to get to that point. And I think, so, you know, in all of this, you know, when people ask, because, right, Denver is probably one of the hottest markets in the country, you know, and I hear people all the time talk about, oh, well, I can't find multifamily or single family rentals here. So I'm looking at Omaha, I'm looking at New Mexico, I'm looking at, you know, Des Moines, Kansas City, Indianapolis, all these other markets. I think Cleveland, I hear a lot. So there, people are having this conversation now because Denver is so inflated and, you know, the average home price, you know better than me, I think is over 500 now. And, you know, the rent is 2000 or 2500. So those numbers aren't that attractive from a cap rate standpoint. So, you know, that's been my biggest experience. And what I preach is, yeah, can you make money? You definitely can. You know, are we now making money? Yeah, every month we're making money. And you know, we recently sold a piece of the portfolio, sold 21 units. And the average price was $52,000 a door. We bought it back in 2016 for around 20. So yeah, is that a big win? That's a big win. But we also took massive losses along the way. And so my punchline for people that are looking at out of state is, yes, you can make money. But I would say you have to have some kind of competitive advantage. You either need to have a great relationship or some kind of competitive advantage when it comes to finding deals. You know, so I'm from Des Moines. So, you know, some of my friends that I grew up with now are commercial brokers. So naturally I get favorable, you know, I get favorable terms with them as far as getting access to properties first and things like that.
First look at a lot of stuff.
A lot of things. Yeah.
So let me ask, just on this note, because I mean, And this is great information. And you know, a lot of the clients that I work with and people I've talked with, there are some, you know, slight differences.
Right.
A lot of people aren't looking to go in there and do like a major renovation.
Right.
They're looking to buy a turnkey or buy a property that doesn't need any work. So they're not going there doing construction or major remodeling. So that's kind of like the first difference. The second difference is they are buying not 50 units. They're buying one or two houses.
Right.
So I know you were, you know, your experience has been different because you focused on these other metrics.
Right.
But advice for, I'll say, the average small investor says, hey, I can, you know, buy one property out of state a year just for retirement savings, just something where I can park my cash and take some cash flow. What advice would you give to those people?
Yeah. So I think, you know, this is a shout out to Gary Vee. This is his big thing is empathy in business. You know, you have to put yourself in the other person's shoes. So if you're a property manager, if I'm a property manager in Denver and someone from LA is coming to Denver to buy one or two units, you have to think I'm filtering, I'm doing showings and I'm getting tenants, right? And I have like this great tenant. They have stable income. They have no evictions. Am I going to be more inclined to put that tenant in a property that's owned by someone out of state that only has one or two doors and I may not do that much volume with? Or am I going to put that tenant in one of my top clients, landlords that has 100 plus doors and is a bigger piece or a percentage of my monthly revenue? So naturally, just our human tendency is going to be, I'm going to put this tenant here because I know that this is, you know, I need to take care of my top client. Now, not to say that they're going to put a terrible tenant in to the out of state, but it's just the tendency is, you know, because they're out of state and they're not there, out of sight, out of mind. And the other thing for me is, you know, real estate's about relationships. So landlords and their property managers obviously, you know, deal on the same thing. It's they trade on equity and relationships and goodwill. And so I just think if you're out of state, how much goodwill can you build up with a property manager, even if you're checking in once a week? You know, there's certain, you know, it's probably like you talking to some of your clients that are out of state. It's different if you're on the phone with them once a month versus if you get coffee with them once a month. You're naturally going to build a stronger rapport with someone you can see face to face and you can walk the property with, you know? So I just think from a relationship standpoint, there's a massive advantage if you're in the same market, and you're a disadvantage if you're out of state. Not to say it can't be done, but you're a disadvantage. I think the other thing is just being able to check on it. You know, I think, you know, we have a saying where, you know, we have to inspect everything. People don't do what you expect. They do what you inspect. And I think naturally property managers can be the same way. If they say we fix something, you know, they can send you a picture of it on email and you can look at it. But it's different if you can go by and check it yourself to see the quality of the work. So I just think from a leasing standpoint, from a maintenance standpoint, you just get a different level of service when you're in the same city as your properties. And you can go by and see them.
I mean, so I agree from, you know, a perspective from somebody who's never invested out of state before. Because that was one of the things when I was looking years ago at investing out of state. I just said, man, I don't know anyone out there. I don't know the market. And I got to trust all these people. And it really concerned me. Because I'm paranoid. I don't have like, think everything's going to work out. Well, I expect bad things to happen.
Right.
And I've heard my fair share of horror stories of, you know, whether it's stock market pyramid schemes and the crash or real estate.
Right.
People losing a bunch of money when the market turned. I was like, yeah, that's going to happen again eventually.
Right.
And I want to be able to know the person or the market so I can hedge against the best
protect
I can.
Protect your downside, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to hear that from you for someone that's invested out of state. Now, I want to pivot because we've been talking about Des Moines.
Right.
Now, what about some of these other markets you invested out of state in?
Yeah. So,
Texas, South Carolina, Louisville, Florida.
Yeah,
any other ones I missed?
We did Vegas back in the day. We did some flips out there. We did South Carolina. We did Charleston. Yeah, we flipped a property in Charleston last year. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, overall, when we looked at what we were doing out of state, because it was the same thing. We were like, we were doing last year, I think we did 40 or 50 single family flips in Denver. And we have the infrastructure. We understood the construction. We understood how to underwrite. So naturally, we thought, oh, we can scale this. Let's go to other markets. Let's find strong operators. Let's do the same thing. And what we learned was the same thing we learned in Des Moines is construction's not the same. You know, just because we have a blueprint for how to source construction, how to manage contractors, how to align interest on how we set up the construction contract and manage it and, you know, all those things. Just because we have the template doesn't mean we can find the same people, the same quality of work for the same price. So that's what we learned time and time again. I mean, when we would look at our timelines in other markets, they were twice as long. When we looked at the budget, they'd go 20 or 30% over budget for the same if a project cost us $30,000 and took us 8 weeks in Denver, it would take 16 weeks out of state and cost us $40,000 to $45,000. So even though we are buying we could do more volume, which is what we were looking for, and buy things maybe even deeper because we had less competition. Net at the end of the day, when you factor in like having to fly there, having to have legal counsel there, just the amount of energy it takes to manage something from Denver in all these other markets, you know, this is kind of why we've downsized and we now only buy in Des Moines and Denver. You know, that's the markets where we know we have a competitive advantage. We have scale, we have relationships, we have the infrastructure set up with property management.
Yeah. So you've actually, there's other markets you scale down because it's just not we don't worth do anything the headache markets. And not worth yeah. the return?
We haven't bought another property out of state in a year.
Okay.
And, you know, we will most likely continue to do so in Tampa because the operator has a competitive advantage down there and it's someone we spend a lot of time with and they have their own skin in the game. But, you know, what we learned in those other markets was we're going to pay a dummy tax. Construction is not going to be the same thing. The market's not... You know, in Denver, the average home sits on the market for what, 30, 45 days? If that, if it's priced right, less than that, maybe.
Oh, yeah. You know, less than that, they'd.
If you price it right, it's 7, 14 days. And in other markets, you're on the market for 60, 90, 120 days, even if it's priced right. It just has less migration. It's not as competitive. It's just a different market, you know? And so, you know, when we've looked at it, we've just said it doesn't make sense. Obviously, we had capital to do it, and we thought we had something unique in this model that we had created, but it's even with that scalable solution and having that relationship with Home Depot and, you know, all these things that we thought were, you know, major competitive advantages, it's nothing's like having boots on the ground and being right there to go touch it, feel it, see it, and having that local knowledge.
Now, I know you guys, you go in there and you just, you know, you want the distressed properties, rehab right. them, fix them up, rent them out and do that. Now, do you have any experience or do your colleagues have, you know, feedback or experience with, you know, turnkey investing?
Right.
Because I know a lot of times, you know, the more expensive markets, right. turnkey operators see a big bullseye on the back of investors in places like Denver, California, right. New York and things yeah. like that. Do you have any experience with those turnkey investors where I say turnkey so everyone knows like, hey, great, you want to buy a place in Oklahoma or Kansas City or Cleveland? You can Google, there's a bunch of them. Say, hey, great, we'll find the property, we rehab it, we fix it up, we sell it to you, we property manage it, we do everything for you.
Right.
And the property costs you $60,000 right. or $70,000.
Yeah.
Do you have any experience with those type of operations?
Yeah, so people have come to us and asked that. When we sold the recent portfolio of 21 units, it's kind of what we had done. We had stabilized it. We sold it to a group out of Connecticut. They were syndicating. It was their first deal. And we sold it at a true 9.5 cap. A true 9.5, that was like their, that's what they will return is 9.5%. And if they raise rents, it'll be even better than that. But the difference was they wanted to hire their own property manager. And there are property management companies and realtors like CBRE in Des Moines will help with that. You know, they can find the property. They can make sure it's turnkey. They'll give you the property manager. They'll do everything
for
you.
But that's for like big commercial stuff. They're not doing houses.
They're not doing houses. Yeah. No, they'll do multifamily. They'll do duplexes, fourplexes, eightplexes, all the way up into, you know, 100
plus units. CBRE, they're probably the biggest commercial firm or one of the biggest
firms. Yeah, one of the biggest.
Firms.
In Des Moines, I think they do the most volume. Yeah.
I mean, they're a big player.
They're
in that.
A big player, yeah, in that yeah. space. So they definitely do that. And I think there's a lot of value there. I think, you know, that's where you can go to Des Moines or Omaha or Kansas City and buy a true 8, 8.5 cap. And in Denver, you're probably stretching to find a 7, I would guess. So you can get an extra, you know, 100 basis points of return by going to the Midwest. Again, the caveat is you have to have really good property management. You have to make sure that you're, inspecting everything. You have to try and build a really strong relationship, you know, and you really have to like dig in and be very thorough on the details because it's not just a spreadsheet. You can't just look at a spreadsheet and say, oh, I'm going to return this. It's better to go there. You have to look at the other factors like maintenance, like how much are they going to charge you to lease it up? You know, there's some other things, you know, that, you know, we can go over that I've really learned that I think help with underwriting a property manager and looking for that to be thorough.
Yeah, let's do that. And you get some very, in the notes you sent before this podcast, you get some really good like rules of thumb and ratios you put together.
Right.
And I'm actually reading the one now, you can't see it, but the rule of thumb on the leasing agent ratio, the yeah. maintenance person ratio. Talk about that stuff.
Yeah, so and to preface this, you know, I've listened to a lot of podcasts out there that talk about out-of-state investing. I think I just think a yellow flag is, you know, they're like even bigger pockets, they talk about out-of-state investing a lot. They've written books on it. I mean, David Green, who I really respect, wrote a book called Long Distance Real Estate Investing, and he lives in San Francisco. I think he invests in 3 or 4 markets. You know, I think, and he makes it, when I hear him talk, I think the cautionary thing for me to everyone out there is he makes it sound really, really easy. Now, keep in mind, he's on bigger pockets. He has a ton of goodwill. He's able to get probably preferential treatment because he is on bigger pockets and because of who he is. So I just think from what I've learned, I think you have to be really careful. And I think the most, and if I could say one thing, it's, it doesn't matter how well you buy the property if you can't manage it. And so you have to have property management down. And to, if I could do Des Moines over again to save me hundreds of thousands, of, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, is I would get the property management piece squared away first. And I would make sure that I had that buttoned up.
So what does that mean?
So what does that look like?
Yeah. What does that mean before you go out there and buy a property?
So what I would do is, so if whoever's going to help you find the property, so earlier we talked about having a competitive advantage. Like if you have an advantage with access to opportunity, so you have a close friend, family member, or someone that you really trust that is a broker in another market and he can send you deals and he's shown you a track record of that. I think the first thing is you fly out there and you sit down with 2 or 3 property managers that work with a similar asset class that you're looking for. So for me, we were looking for, you know, C plus, B minus properties that had significant value add component, construction component. So I if I could do it all over again, I would come into the market. If my brother didn't live in Des Moines and my dad didn't live there, and look for a property manager that manages similar type properties. And that's number one, because there's property managers out there that deal with lower income, deal with affordable housing, deal with Section 8, and there's other ones that don't like to mess with it. And so you need to find a property manager that is has experience in the asset class that you're going to be in, because not all multifamily, not all rentals and single family are all the same. So that's number one. I think the second thing is when you sit down with 2 or 3 is, you know, I think one of the rules of thumbs is bigger is not always better. So just because someone says they manage 2 or 3,000 units does not mean they're better suited for you. I think one of the big questions is, how many units do they manage? How many doors? And then how many leasing agents do they have? And how do they handle maintenance? How many maintenance workers do they have?
Yeah, because you had said in your notes here that the rule of thumb is that one leasing agent can handle between 75 and 100 units. And if it's more than 125, it's a red flag.
Yeah. So, and to preface that, every market's different. I think rule of thumb, having been in 7 or 8 different markets and done this, you know, if it's single family, I think it needs to be closer to 75. Right. If you're doing single family, you want to find someone that has one leasing agent for every 75 homes. The reason is economies of scale. If you're running around leasing up 70 and doing renewals on 75 homes in different parts of the city, you can only be so thorough.
Yeah, it's a lot more time.
It's
in
a lot more time in a car.
A lot more miles.
Right. And if they're multifamily units, then I think you can get away with 125 because you're in one place. You can lease up multiple units at a time. You can do one showing and have a lot more units to cover. So I think a rule of thumb is how many total doors do they have? How many leasing agents? So if someone says we manage 1,000 doors and it's the right asset class that directly relates with what you're going to be buying and they have 10 or more leasing agents, then I think check the box. That checks out, right? If they were to say we had 4 or 5, I would, you know, you can listen and finish the meeting, but I would strongly discourage anyone from doing when the ratio is 2 to 1, you know, 200 doors to one leasing agent.
Really? Just based off of that, you would
I just think it's difficult. I think it's difficult because I just think they're going to cut corners because they're going to try and still fill it up in a short amount of time. But because they have so many units that they're having to fill and to cover, they're going to either, you know, they're going to cut corners on the credit score, on their background, on the evictions. They're maybe not going to be as thorough in their background. Maybe they're not going to call the former landlord. I mean, just naturally, when you have twice as much work to do, you're not going to be able to do as good a job for someone that's managing 100 doors.
Yeah.
And industry standard, I would say you should be right around 100. And if it's single family, closer to 75. Multifamily, you can go up to 125. And then when it comes to maintenance, I think it's the exact same thing. In Des Moines right now, we have 250 some, you know, plus units. We just sold 21, so we're at 270. And we have 3 full-time maintenance guys, 3 full-time and 1 part-time for 250. And the key there is if you put yourself as a tenant, right? And you have an issue, right? Let's say there's an electrical shortage. The microwave's not working. The fridge isn't working. The toilet's leaking or the roof's leaking or something massive. If you have one maintenance worker for every 200 doors, how long do you think it's going to take them to address that tenants issue? It's going to take twice as long from someone that has a 100 door to one maintenance ratio, right? If the guy is managing 100 doors, his response time is going to be twice as fast. Naturally, the tenant's going to be much happier if it takes 3 days versus 6 days or 7 days. And it's better on your property. So you have to really pay attention. I think the leasing is big because the number one killer of ROI, and we got this from Eric Ross, you know, this is his like favorite line. The number one killer of ROI is vacancy, right? Even if you take $50 less a month, but it's filled twice as fast, your net at the end of the year, your return is much higher, right? So leasing matters because you're going to get a better tenant and it's going to be filled faster if you're closer to that ratio. And then the maintenance matters because you're going to have a happier tenant. You're going to have a better property that's in better condition, and they're going to be able to service the tenant much faster, and they're going to be more thorough. Right? If I'm fixing and patching something and I have 10 other people lined up for that day and I'm 6 days behind because I have 200 doors that I'm managing, you know, how thorough am I going to be on the actual quality of work?
Well, you're around putting out fires 100%. And just getting it good enough to move on to the next
exactly.
one.
Exactly. You're kind of just putting Band-Aid on it. So that's my, you know, those would be a couple of those tips on the ratio. So I think you should, you know, we'll put these in the show notes, I think, but I think that that's like a big deal to pay attention to. And that's a question that most people probably aren't aware to ask. Based on me losing hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think this is something that we can kind of shorten that learning curve. And I think the next thing I would say is, once you get the ratio, is I would ask about how they bill. So you want to ask, how is leasing billed and how is maintenance billed? You know, is there a guaranteed trip charge? If someone comes out to fix a leaking toilet or faucet or the handle on a fridge, is it a $100 trip charge or is it just billed hourly? And, you know, one of the things that we've done is when we lease up a unit, we give them kind of like a cheat sheet where if things are easier fixes, like leaking toilets, leaking faucets, we have a YouTube video on how they can fix that themselves.
For the tenant,
right? There's a certain thing, you know, like certain fridges will over freeze, and there's something that they can do in the back of the fridge, and we show them how to fix that themselves, P-trap, you know, there's like 10 things that they can fix themselves, screens, you know, all this stuff. So that naturally makes the tenant, now we're putting, you know, ownership on the tenant. They know that if these 10 things were not going to come out, they can do it themselves. And then it helps our maintenance guys because when they go out, they know that it's going to be something that the tenant couldn't fix themselves, right? So,
and what do you find your tenants complying with that?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. And I think it's all about setting expectation. Like we walk through that with them. So you want to ask the property manager, how do you walk me through the steps when you fill a unit? What are you teaching them? What manual, what are you giving them? You know, what are their expectations? How do you, you know, so one of the things is, how do you bill maintenance? Is it billed hourly? Or do they charge extra for the materials? How do they, you know, how is that sent in an invoice? And then leasing is, what is the bonus for a lease up? You know, typically industry standard is half a month. Some places will charge a full month. And then the caveat with that is if there's an eviction within a year, you want to negotiate that. If you pay, let's say you pay, the rent is $1,000. Let's say you pay $1,000 as a lease up bonus, right?
Yep.
Which is a big deal. And you pay $1,000 and there's an eviction, you know, within that year, you want them to lease that up for free. That's included. So if you're going to pay a larger lease up fee, then it needs to be guaranteed for the year, that they fill that for the year, right? So these are little nuances that we've learned over the years that I just think these are quick tips. That, and if you're asking these questions, I think you're going to get a lot of, you know, the property manager is going to look at you as someone that they respect and that knows what they're doing by asking these questions. So just, you know, those are the things that come to mind that stand out when you're negotiating or having these conversations and interviewing property managers, if you do decide to go out of state and you do have a competitive advantage.
So taking away your competitive advantage out there in Des Moines, right. So your family, get your brother and your father out there that are just, you know, your trusted boots on the ground and stuff. So let's just say they no longer live there or never live there. Would you still invest in Des Moines knowing what you know now, but you went through all just traditional brokers and property managers and things like that?
Yeah, my brother and I talk about this quite a bit, you know, because he wants to naturally, now that he's, you know, kind of caught the fever of real estate and sees, you know, cash flow and sees the power of cap rates and those kind of things, you know, he wants to open up other markets. And, you know, that's my big thing is, unless we have someone that our interests are fully aligned, that we can trust, that's going to have our back, it's just not worth it to go into another market. You know, I think a couple months ago, there was someone that wanted to sell, and he came from Arkansas, in Northwest Arkansas, and someone wanted to sell like 150 doors at like $20,000 a door, you know, so some ridiculous number that, you know, and the cap rate was probably 12 or 13 and, you know, made a ton of sense on paper. And just based on my experience in New Orleans, I was like, listen, I don't even want you to spend another minute of brain space thinking about anything besides Des Moines. Let's just go deeper where we're at. And I think the same thing in Denver. You know, I think that people call me with the Springs and Fort Collins and all this other stuff, but I know what it takes to even just go an hour and a half. You know, when I have the infrastructure, I have the silo built in Denver and Des Moines. There's no need to get creative. I just want to keep it boring now and just focus, just go deeper in these markets. So to answer your question, no, I wouldn't. If my brother hadn't moved to Des Moines, we'd have sold everything. And I'd be telling you a much different story. Like, look, we had to throw in the towel. It was just too difficult. I just think that if you're going to do something out of state, it needs to be because you have a significant competitive advantage. It should not be based out of necessity. If that's the case, just build stronger relationships in your market, right? So if you're in Denver, you know, we met with a couple, I think a month ago, and they said their cousins live out of state, they're property managers, and they do construction. So naturally I was like, all right, well, to me, in my mind, that would qualify you to, you could seriously look out of state because you have a family member that you trust that's in the business. They do two big pieces of the pie, which is they do construction and they do property management. So naturally, if they're your family, they're going to look out for you, and that would qualify as a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that in Des Moines, I would just strictly be doing Denver and be, you know, going deeper here, which deeper,
even though Denver is, I'm using air quotes here, more expensive than other parts.
Yeah.
It wouldn't faze you just because you're local and you have everything here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just like you, I mean, everyone says it's too expensive and it's overpriced and we can never find a deal. And last year we bought 100 units in Denver. And just by doing the fundamentals, you know, I talk about, we network, you know, we're actively building relationships with other people and we move quickly. Right. And we've done all these, you know, we've kind of built, you know, and so that's all I would do is I would just go deeper in Denver, which to me just means I would build more relationships. I'd get to know more people. I would study the market. I would look for pockets of Denver that maybe hadn't been as developed, you know, just there's so many things that you can do. You can never do enough things to like find deals in a tough market, you know? And I think that would be my solution. And that would be my message to someone that doesn't have a competitive advantage is, get connected, build relationships, get creative, maybe partner with someone that does have the relationships. You can learn from them. You can maybe invest, or you could find ways to add value to get a piece of the deal. There's just so many ways to do things in Denver, even though the market is tight and it is really competitive.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And so I agree with you. And it's interesting because kind of my big thing I always came back to was, hey, I'm not a flipper. I did my one flip, made a few bucks and realized I did not want to do that as a business model.
Right.
It's all about just, you know, long-term rentals for me.
Right.
And I'll sell in 1031 in the future and do all that stuff. But I was like, hey, in 30 years, do I want a property that's near me or property out of state? And I think a lot of people just don't have that patience.
Right.
They look very short term.
Right.
Like, hey, great, I'm making a 12% cash on cash in year one. I'm like, great, that's year one. And, you know, money in 1 year does not make a difference to me as far as rental property.
Right.
But what's it perform over 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was the final thing I was reading back to. I'm just going to invest where I live.
Right.
And even if I lived out of Denver, I would still invest where I lived.
Right. Yeah. So I think you're the same. Like my goal with this was, I think we've a ton of battle wounds. We've had some wins. We've had a ton of losses. And I think that it's something that people could use to help them make their decision. You know, not to say that out-of-state investing is bad. It's definitely not bad. You know, on my personal balance sheet, the biggest equity position I have is out of state, you know? So it definitely works. It definitely can make money. I just think there's a process you should go through, and you should really take a careful look and examine what is your motive for going out of state. Is it just because, the patience? Is it because you're maybe getting lazy in Denver and not wanting to spend the extra time, you know, looking at the MLS at night, going to that networking event on the weekend or at night? You know, what are the things you could be doing that you're not doing in your market that is motivating you to possibly go out of state just because someone says it's easier or it looks better on paper? Because, you know, like we've talked about, just because it looks better on paper doesn't mean it's actually at the end of the day, net going to be better in the bank account. And so I think, you know, what is the motive? What is the competitive advantage? And if there is no competitive advantage, I would challenge, you know, let's go deeper where you're at and figure out what are the creative things you could be doing to create more opportunity where you're at. And if you do have a competitive advantage, I think, you know, really, really spend a lot of time researching property management, because it doesn't matter how good you buy it if you can't manage it. if you can't actually get the rents and keep a tenant in the unit, it doesn't matter how good that Excel spreadsheet looks.
Yeah.
And I learned that the hard way.
Because things multiplied by zero are still zero. I learned that in previous businesses. Terrence, this has been wonderful. I'm looking through my notes here. I've checked off every question I wanted to ask you. But I know we were all over the place. Any final thoughts, things you want to touch on before we hit the stop button here?
No, I think that, you know, there's a bunch of resources out there. Like I said, I think this is my personal experience. So that's what I'm sharing is my personal experience. Everybody's going to have a different experience. Like I said, you can go on Bigger Pockets and you're going to hear 20 different, you know, opinions and their personal experience. So I just, you know, do your research, talk to multiple people. You know, David Green has a book. You can go pick that up. Obviously, he is very pro it, even without having a competitive advantage. And he has his own system for doing that. This has been my story, my system. And I just encourage everyone to, you know, do your research and really look for where you have the most competitive advantage.
Wonderful. Well, before we wrap up, I want to give a plug. I think we mentioned this in our last podcast, and we've not done a wonderful job of getting it out there quite the way we'd wanted to, but it was the Denver Ride Along Show,
right?
Which is an idea you had last year. I hopped on board because it was cool. Tell us what that is. Tell our listeners what that is, because I think it's still a very cool thing.
Yeah, Denver, the Ride Along Show is where we invite a guest every, you know, 4 to 8 weeks. It's taken a little longer than we thought to edit these videos and get them published, but we have a really good team in place. I think it's been a lot of fun. We've had 3 different guests out so far. They get to spend a day with us, really 2 or 3 hours. We show them a few properties, and it's normally someone that is an expert in another field, whether it be fashion, whether it be education, whether it be a different aspect of real estate than investing. The last guest we had on is a star in $1 Million Listing, and her specialty is luxury real estate. Obviously, that's different than investing. That's a different form of investing. And so we have someone in and they get to spend time with us. We get to ask them questions about what they're doing. And normally it's someone that's looking to get into real estate investing, but doesn't know that much. And they get to spend a day with us, see real projects, you know, look at numbers and just get to pick our brain and learn about investing in Denver. So it's been a lot of fun. I think it could be valuable for people out there that are looking to get into real estate investing and possibly live out of state or have another full-time job, but are interested in dabbling in real estate.
Well, I think it's just cool. I mean, I go along the show with you, but I get to enjoy getting to see all the projects you work on.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see what you and Brandon are doing around town with these big projects, because it's definitely unique.
Yeah.
And it's not something you see on HGTV.
That is a little different. I appreciate that. Yeah.
We'll put the link in the show notes on there, and we'll be doing a lot more of those this year, and we'll get everything organized, get a lot more of those out. Terrence, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.